Hey everyone, I'm Dahlia.
And I'm Alma. This is Nightmare on Fifth Street, a horror movie podcast.
Okay, everyone. So this week we are discussing, I just jumped right into it, didn't I?
Yeah,
I
do pause. It. I just
the War of the Worlds, not the, what was it? What was the Steven Spielberg one, 2005, something like that? We're not doing that one.
This is
obviously because we're doing
the original
60.
The original. This is like, yeah, this thing is 70 years old, man. Think of it that way. 70 years old. This movie is 70 years old. I was watching, I was telling everybody, this is 70. We get it. 70 years old. The story is over 100 years old.
70 years old, this movie. I didn't even think of it that way. Huh. Okay. All right. Yeah. 1953, this movie. This is based off of the War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells, which Adam already said. What year was that? Did that come out, though? I already forget.
2021 or something like that.
2021, Alma?
Yeah, 1920-21.
What?
Yeah, 1920 or 21.
Oh, I thought you were saying... I'm hearing you all wrong.
I'm hearing 2020.
Yes, that's what I was like looking at you like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's over 100 years old. Like, it is really... really old, super old. Did we get that? We're like super mega old. You know what's cool is that this movie is in color, and
it's Technicolor.
I didn't think it was. Yeah, it's Technicolor, and I was like, oh, okay. I expected it to be in black and white when I pushed play. I was like, oh shit, this is in color. That's so cool, and it looks great. I like it. It looks interesting. You know, like it's fun to look at.
I think it's the first movie so far that we've seen this season that's been in color.
Yeah, you're right. It might be, but I think I'm thinking that Vincent Price in House of Wax might have been in color, but I can't remember.
Was it? Oh, see, I can't remember now.
I can't remember. That may be the only one, but it's only because I remember looking at the wax figures in the museum, and that could be posters, pictures, or something like that. But it might have been because it was supposed to be in 3D, or it is in 3D. So it was probably in color.
I completely forgot that movie was in 3D. This movie was supposed to be in 3D as well. The last third of the movie. When they do their bombing. So, but
yeah,
of course they scrapped that idea, which I'm curious to see how that would have turned out. Would have been like little alien hands reaching out to us, like towards the screen, like I'm doing right now.
That was a sound effect. That was the sound effect they would have used. It would have been the best. It would have been so scary.
They got really creative with the sound coming at the screen. I know,
because I think this movie would have sounded really great in a theater. Like, if anywhere plays this and I see it, I love movies where there's a lot of sound and it's like louds and booms and bangs and stuff. And like, for example, I was watching The Changeling last night and I was like, this is so much better if I could have seen it in a theater. Because it's not like I have surround sound. I've never been into like speakers and surround sound or anything like that. I have a biggish screen to watch movies on, but I don't have surround sound and stuff like that. And when I watch stuff like this, I think that's why people have it. So they could be hearing all the booming and the pew, pew. And was it really like pew, pew? Or was it more like pew, pew? I'm not sure. Or like, you know, the lasers that were going on.
It was lots of lasers.
Laser. Yeah, but what's the sound it made? Like, I can't make it.
I can't remember, but I was reading about how they did some of the sounds. Like, they used like a woman screaming backwards. They used a guitar. Yeah. They used Oh gosh, blow torches. They use things scraping against the ground. They got really creative with everything.
And then people leaned into the microphone and went, kablooey. It sounded just like that.
It sounded exactly like that.
Yeah,
it was. Exactly like that. I have one of my dogs next to me playing with one of his new toys. So if you hear anything, that's him chewing away on it. I get him the bully make.
Or it could be a Martian.
Or it could be a Martian. That's right. One thing that I found interesting about this movie is like from the beginning when the Martians invaded. It's Martians. It's Martians in the book. It's Martians in the movie. But they don't even doubt that it's Martians. Mm-hmm. It's Martians. It's 100%. They're from Mars.
That's it. They are. Yeah. It was just like a fact that was stated, the end. And it wasn't, you know, and it was definitely aliens. It wasn't man-made. They kind of talked about the science in the beginning, like it was going too slow for it to be this and it couldn't have been heavy. So therefore it had to have been a flying object that hit the Earth. Definitely not a meteor because it would have been heavier. There would have been a huger boom. One thing that was missing from this version that we watched was that sound effect of it hitting the Earth because it was only in the theatrical release. So that's why I thought it was interesting when it crashed to the Earth, everybody looks and, but there is no huge boom of it, like breaking the sound barrier or whatever. That was something that was specifically in the movies and then they didn't put it in the movie itself. So, you know, and maybe if that was added, we could have done the science ourselves and go, well, judging by the trajectory and the speed at which it was hitting the Earth.
Yeah. Well,
but they got a lot of scientists in this one to tell us though.
They did. And they used a lot of science in the movie, like a lot of science. Even if it's not real science, they used a lot of science to justify a lot of things that were going on. Like you said, like the way the Martians act on Earth, the way their ships act, the way they chose Earth, everything. It's all sciencey. And like Alma said, there's a lot of scientists in this movie. Speaking of who's in this movie, Alma, can you talk about the director, writer, who's in this movie, all that good stuff?
Sure. I apologize for saying it like that. Okay, people. This movie was directed by Byron Haskin. Dale has already mentioned that it was adapted from The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. The screenplay was written by Barre Lyndon. And I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Barre or Barre. And it stars Gene Barry as Dr. Forrester, Anne Robinson as Sylvia Van Buren, Lewis Martin as Pastor Dr. Matthew Collins, Vernon Rich as Colonel Ralph Hefner, Les Tremaine as Major General Mann, Jack Crucian as Salvatore, Henry Brandon as the local cop, and Walter Sandy as Sheriff Bagani, who was the head of like the local law enforcement. There's a lot of uncredited people in there, a lot, because, you know, they did talk to a lot of people, but some of the people didn't have names. They just said doctor or scientist. This guy's a scientist, this guy's a doctor. And then they actually used like real National Guard people. So that was pretty cool. You know,
they used them when they were going through their, what do they call their things? Their, I already forgot what they're called. When they go through their mobility training and all that, they use that kind of footage from them. And they were actually on the set, obviously, for the movie. And they would salute. I forget which one, the major, general, or the colonel. They would salute because they're in uniform, these actors. So the National Guardsmen would salute them. And I just thought that was kind of... It's not cute because I don't want to belittle the military, but it's cute because
they're used to it. And so they see the uniform, they thought, oh, I'm in real uniform. This guy's got to be in real uniform.
Exactly.
Well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that was interesting.
They had some real archival footage too of like explosions that they edited together to make the movie more realistic. And I like that. I didn't know how they were going to do it. The movie had a $2 million budget, which is approximately $22.9 million today. And it doesn't seem like a lot, but they did a lot with it. in my opinion, because the beginning was like, is this going to be like a little play? Is this going to be like everything's kind of in one place? No, I mean, they had the streets. They were showing people. I know that there are parts where they took like 50 people and they just kind of copy pasted it on the screen so you could look like more. But they had sets and miniature models, and damn, could they stretch a book? Maybe, like, you know, whatever they did there, they could use some of that now and save some money. You know, here's some money saving tips. Okay. Think about these classic movies. They stretch that buck, you know.
I thought they didn't do it. They did not do it all on the studio set. They did it out in the city as well. Like Alma said, the fact that they could get, I mean, the visual effects that they used for the movie, obviously, when you look at it, you know, when you're looking at it through today's eyes, you're thinking like, oh my gosh, like that's kind of, that looks interesting because it's so old and everything. But at the time, it was very advanced. And the fact that they were able to do it all, and like you said, on that budget, yes, $22.9 million today is a lot of money. But when you're thinking of a movie of this scale, it's not. It's not. Not when you have all the people involved, all the visual effects, all the everything. Anyways. And then plus, you still have to pay the actors.
Oh yeah, you got to pay those people, or apparently not pay them. Apparently, what's going on?
I was about
right
to
now.
Say,
like, what the hell, people? These people better have gotten paid, and if you're not getting credited, what the hell? So, you know, it was just very it surprised me how well they were able to get this done. You know, it was smart. There are a lot of differences between the story and the movie, of course. And what they always did was like, well, we can't do that. We can't make it look like that. What can we do? And that is just like really just smart thinking, you know, is like, this has to look believable. This has to look real and enough for people to get scared. And I think they did a good job, especially because like the original story, remember hearing it when we were kids, scared me.
It is. I want to reread it. And I should probably just do that today. Go to a bookstore and pick it up and reread it. Whatchamacallit? Oh my God, I already forgot what I was going to say. Oh yeah, we found it. I found this on Paramount Plus. Alma, you found it on Paramount Plus as well?
Yes. And there's a couple of other places you can watch it streaming. Canopy. It was available through Canopy. Mm-hmm. And that's smart because if you got your library card, which someone reminded me recently, it was like, hello, go to Canopy and look for it for free. There it was. So I'm not sure if it had, like if there were different versions of it or whatever. You know how sometimes I'll have like an extra minute or two and I'm always like, I want to know what that minute or two is. What could it be? Maybe it was more people that got credited. Maybe they put the names of the people sheets of uncredited people.
Their actual names. Okay, so we've already started talking about it. I'm sure you all have heard of it. If you haven't watched it, you've heard of it. War of the Worlds is a small town in California is attacked by Martians, beginning a worldwide invasion. And again, I just thought it was so funny how right away it was Martians and not just aliens. It wasn't just aliens. It's Martians. They knew they were from Mars. Little green men. They weren't green in this, though.
They were kind of reddish. They looked veiny. Ugh, they were veiny. I'm glad they showed them.
And they looked different from the book as well. Obviously, there's a lot of differences, obviously, from the book. So, but we're going to be talking about the movie, not the book. But the changes that were made, though, like Alma said, were for... were because it was hard to make it look like it was described in the book. Like the spacecrafts themselves that were going around roaming the Earth, they were made to fly instead of being on tripods because they couldn't make the tripod, you know, walking look right. Mm-hmm. They couldn't keep that up. So it was easier just to make the flying, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I like that because the science should have been more advanced. Their technology should have been way more advanced than what we have here. And therefore, I wouldn't question this hovering craft that moves slowly down the street shooting. I mean, it came from fucking Mars. You know what I mean? And the intro had little pieces on why it was chosen, the Earth, but we would know that it's because, you know, we have organic life, we have, you know, resources or whatever, and other places wouldn't have had those things. So what was their goal? What was your goal, Martians. You're coming to Earth and you just want to destroy everything.
Yeah, what's your motivation here?
Yeah, what's your motivation? I like that it was like it reminded me a little bit of Independence Day, you know, when they land and they're landing near major cities. This one is a random one in California. And but they're landing and then extra craft show up and they're in groups of three over large cities, big cities. And they know it is all over the world. When they come, it knocks out the electricity, power, radios, everything. And they're communicating, I think, they were very specific about it. It wasn't radio because I don't know what they had back then. Like
they were specific probably, and I forgot. Yeah, I'm not good with that stuff. So
yeah, I'm like, I keep referencing Independence Day, but obviously that's where they got the inspiration from because they were communicating with Morse code on, you know, whatever that is. Like, what is it? I don't know. But they didn't have radio communication, but the military came in and they were smartly cooperating like, oh, we're just here to help. And weren't they seemed so cooperative. It was like
worked really well together. Yeah, they did. They absolutely did. And they were referring to the scientists a lot. So like in other movies, you'll see where they ignore the scientists. This one, they were 100% listening to the scientists, like asking their opinion, trying to get what, you know, so they could figure out how to kill these things because they knew that there was going to be a weakness because the weakness was not their technology because they kept trying to take out their the Martian technology. The Martian technology was way advanced, obviously. So they figured if these aliens are on Earth, then hopefully that's how they can get them. And obviously that's how they did. I mean, like I said, even if you haven't watched the movie, you all know how this ends. I like the movie intro. Alma and I were having this discussion before, talking about how these old movies always have these movie intros where they narrate the beginning of the film so you can kind of get an idea, get into it. Alma, can you read this one? I know hopefully I'm not putting you on the spot, but go ahead.
I love it. It's because it seems almost like you're sitting down for story time and they always give you a little bit of background that helps you understand what's going on in case you haven't read the story or whatever. It says the War of the Worlds opens with a black and white prologue featuring newsreel war footage and a voiceover by Paul Frees that describes the destructive technological advancements of earthly warfare from World War I through World War II. The image then crash cuts to vivid Technicolor and the dramatic opening title card and credits. The story begins with a series of color matte paintings by astronomical artist Chelsea Bonestell that depict the planets of our solar system, except Venus, about which little was known at the time. The narrator, Sir Cedric Hardwick, tours the hostile environment of each world, eventually explaining to the audience why the Martians found our lush green and blue Earth the only world worthy of their scrutiny and coming invasion. We were worthy of destruction. That's pretty badass.
So the movie begins with this large object crashing into Earth and a lot of people see it. It's not like it crashes like, you know, in a lot of movies, you know, they has it like only a couple of people see it. No, a lot of people saw it. And right away, it was like a spectacle. Like people wanted to go over to it and start touching it and seeing it and being up close to it. It's like, of course.
Like the Blob. Because of the Blob, nobody really saw it except for a handful of people. And how do you not see this giant thing shooting to the Earth? I mean, it looked like a comet. Like racing across the sky. Of course, you're going to turn and look. And it crashes. And I like it because you didn't have shit to do. It's great to know that everybody was chismosos back then, just like today. They're like, let's go check that shit out.
And they did. And thankfully, the scientists came on scene and they're like, okay, so let's go ahead and start keeping people away. And again, the local cops and the military start coming on site and they start deferring to the scientists and they're like, okay, let's get three people watching this thing. I don't know what the three people were supposed to do. I mean, I really don't know, but they had three people watching over it or something.
I think it had to do with the fire because, so the main people, Dr. Forrester, he happens to be fishing there. He's an atomic scientist and he meets Sylvia at the crash site along with a pastor. And the pastor is Sylvia's uncle. Now, he just happens to be there, but he's explaining this, but they listen right away. The fire that was there, it looked like complete chaos when they were putting out the fire that from the crash site, right? Everybody was just kind of like throwing fire. I'm like, this needs to get more coordinated. And I think that's what they were supposed to be watching to see if the fire reignited. And the three of them are just watching. They're not poking. They're not doing anything weird or anything like that. They're just like keeping an eye on it, I guess, while the scientist guy goes and there's always like one scientist in these movies who coordinates everything, right? And this is Dr. Forrester. So they're just left behind, I guess, just to keep an eye on it.
I like how the three guys that were left behind, though, start talking about it like it's going to be a sideshow type of thing. Like they're going to have people coming and they're going to start charging. They're going to have food. They're going to have tamales. Remember that? That got me craving tamales and stuff like that. And how they're planning on making money off of this thing. I can't think of the word. What do they call it? There's a word for it and I can't think of it. It's like a very simple
sideshow attraction, like
attraction, an attraction. That's the word. Okay. I was looking for. Yeah. They were going to make this thing an attraction, like start charging money and start charging like, you know, for food and start charging for all that. So they were all into it. Unfortunately, while these three guys are watching though, something starts coming out of this large rock on fire. It unscrews. And of course it's going to be a Martian ship. There's three ships to each rock. I say mm-hmm. rock. I don't know. They're calling them something. I forget what they call them. But when it crashes to Earth, it crashes like a rock. And inside each one are three ships.
And I didn't realize that. But you're right. Because yeah. They were inside of the rock thing. Yeah. I guess that's what keeps it safe while it crashes.
Yeah, I don't know. I just remember that because they said later that each one had three because they start seeing a whole bunch of these rocks falling to Earth and inside each one is three. And then there's just so many and you multiply that by however many and each one has so many aliens inside and blah, blah, blah. So these three guys witness something coming out of it and ends up being a ship that obliterates them. They mm-hmm. end up just being little charred versions of themselves on the ground. So they died, unfortunately. Yay. But the funny thing was that everybody, when they left these three guys to protect the scene, I guess, or to watch over the scene, they all went off to a square dance in town. That was what, because the scientist is all like, that. Yeah, the scientist is all like, what is there to do on a Saturday night or whatever night it was? And they're like, oh, there's a square dance going on over blah, blah, blah. So they all went off to square dance. And while they're square dancing, they see an explosion far away. And then they start seeing more of the things fall. So this is where we start seeing like this is where the war of the worlds begins, because it's not just that one little rock that fell. And it's not just one little ship. It's a whole bunch. And that's where everything starts. It's pandemonium after that. I don't know if it starts off right away like that. No, actually it does. Well, it starts off really quick. It starts off really quick.
Very calm at this point in like, oh, the power's out. Oh, our compass is swirling around in circles. It's now pointing to the rock. Their watches stop working. The phone lines are down. And they realize that the first thing that happens, like you said, was the crash. And then the power goes out. Then the phone. And then their communications are cut off. But they're all kind of just rallying together because they all seem, they're nice. And that's unusual. That's the part that we should question. Where is the fighting and the military yelling at the civilians and the civilians secretly, you know, joining forces with other civilians? In this one, there's cooperation. That's the part that's unbelievable. Not Martians coming to Earth. It's that humankind was cooperating with one another.
So they start setting up, they start calling in the military and they start trying to fight them. Oh, my little doggy wants to go outside. He's going to have to wait, pobrecito. So if you hear me getting distracted, that's what it is. So the military start coming in, and like you said, right away they start deferring to the scientists on the scene. Did you notice though that this guy, Dr. Forrester, he had a plane as well, like they did in Tarantula?
Yeah, he's like, I've got my plane. And I'm like, the fuck? Do all the scientists have planes? Or I guess maybe that was something that people had back then, that all the like doctors and stuff, they have their own personal plane. Well, that's handy, you know? I'll just hop in my plane. I don't want to get in your fucking little plane. That sounds dangerous to me. It's not a car. Why were they so comfortable? Like 70 years ago, people were very comfortable in those things. I just don't see that happening either. That's very unrealistic to me.
It's not the Martians. It's the flying the plane that was very unrealistic to you. Yeah, because he mentions his plane because they the other scientists that he was fishing with, they have to go back to the university that I forget what the university is that they're all from, that they all work out of. But he says, yeah, they took my plane back to the university so they could, you know, kind of get a jump start on figuring out what the hell's going on here. So they're war machines. They're called war machines. That's what the Martian crafts were called. They're called war machines. I forgot. Three war machines out from each one. And they start seeing that their firepower, the earth firepower. That sounded so stupid. Why did I say it like that? Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. The earthly firepower. Our military firepower is of no use. It doesn't do shit to the Martian technology. Did you notice how every time they would like start shooting at the Martian technology, the little force field that would show up around it? It was so cute the way it looked.
It looked like bell jar. Is that what they're called?
Yes.
You know, where you put the little cover on it is their force field. And this Dr. Forrester was like, it's magnetic. Let me show you. And he busts out a pin. And I don't have these life skills. Should I have these life skills to test for magnetism in case of an apocalypse? I don't know. But he uses it to show this is why our communications are down. But they also have a magnetic force field around them. I need to correct myself about something, but I said the wrong year for the War of the Worlds was written between 1895 and 1897.
Okay, and I thought it was older, but you said it was such authority. I was like, well, you know what?
I'm remembering.
I'm wrong on a lot of things.
No. I'm remembering something else right now, and I don't know why, but it was something to do with 100. Oh, I think it might have been purchased for production in 2122. Okay, there you go. Okay. That's what it was. Okay, so I just wanted to correct myself because I don't want to seem like I just made stuff.
I'm sure our listeners were screaming into the thing. Our listeners were like, no, it was a blah.
for those who know and are huge fans of, you know, the War of the Worlds. But anyway, yeah, it's what they used. I thought it looked incredible. It looked great. I know people like to scrutinize these movies that it looks too fakey or whatever. I thought it looked cool. And I also liked the shape of the craft and the way it had that little arm that came out, because that was also in the remake that was in 2011 or whatever. You know, had like a mechanical long arm that came out with a triangular shape and the three lens. It was like the number three repeated over and over again and everything. And it had the lens on it. That was reused in that movie because it had that long arm that was going out to look for people. That's fucked up. It was looking for every human to destroy it. And I was like, why is it so angry with the humans? You know, why does it want everybody dead so bad? Because it was searching. And when once the firefight started, you know, you mentioned that the military wasn't doing anything because of their stuff, but they were just going out the ships and just shooting everything and killing everything and exploding everything. I thought, well, you could go hide in a building or you could go do this. No, you can't, because they were using every resource they have, the Martians, to make sure that they eradicated humanity. It was like that was their goal. they just travel, what, to different worlds just to completely annihilate everybody?
Right. So I think in the book, it makes it more clear that they came to Earth because Martian life, it wasn't sustainable anymore, and they needed a new place to live. And so they obviously need to get rid of us Earthlings, I guess, when they come over. That way they're not
competing for resources. They could have asked nicely. Well, they could have shared, because it was real cute when those three dudes were there and they see the Martian coming out and they're like, let's wave a white flag because everybody knows that means we come in peace. They were trying to make friends. And so they were waving their white flag and everything. We could have worked together, even though the Martian was gnarly looking. It was gnarly. It was ew. It was gross. I would have gone, eh, and I would have like fake vomited into my hand and said, welcome to Earth. Eh.
Well, that one lady practically does, the way she screams when she sees it, remember?
Oh yeah, I forgot.
She's a good screamer, man. That
yeah,
actress.
She was. Sylvia, one thing I wanted to mention about her, she had brought up in the beginning of the movie that she had a master's degree, and they always have these super intelligent women in these movies. And when the war started, they have her handing out coffee and croissants to people. And it's like, that's a scientist lady. She was a director of library science at the university or something like that. And it's like, and they have her handing out croissants and coffee. And it's just, we need to use everybody. But then they did have another scientist woman who was analyzing the blood and stuff like that. So that was good. But I just thought it was interesting that they had her handing out coffee to people. Like, remember the one movie in Alaska at the Post, the scientist, she was going around and getting everybody coffee and stuff. And it's like, oh, I would have just like spit in their fucking coffee. You ask me to get you some damn coffee, I'll spit in your damn coffee. Here you go. They have brains, you know.
Who, the women or the Martians? I already forgot who you were talking about. No, I'm just
I don't even know. But the Martian was gross, but it looked cool though. And like the way that they show like one arm, it's like, I know that they're using the same thing over and over because it's not like they have the budget to show a lot, but the creepy gnarly arm coming out. And then when it touched her on the shoulder, who's not going to scream? I did that like 20 minutes ago when my husband handed me my coffee. I didn't know he was there. You're going to scream. You know, the thing is that they wanted to kill everybody. So once all that fighting goes off, like everybody's starting to shoot, the scientists are trying to come up with a way to destroy the crafts. And then they decide that their only choice is they're going to use, what's that bomb? The nuclear bomb? Is that what they're called? Yeah. So they shoot their nuclear bomb. Is that what you call it? I feel like you should explain.
They dropped it. They dropped it. They dropped it. Yeah. They decide that's how they're going to do it. So, but that doesn't work, obviously. We just see their little force fields take over and they still continue to start shooting everybody and everything around. And this is where we see the extras that were the National Guard, actually. The way they did it, I thought they did it kind of neat. I forget the process. It's called something, but they would show they were showing a scene of National Guardsmen around a tank, and then it just, it starts to glow red and green. And then next thing you know, the next image is of them burnt into the ground. And they kept showing that over and over. And I just thought that was really neat the way they did that for the time period. Yeah. For the time period that they figured out how to do that and still been able to use the color, the technicolor to their advantage. Like, cause they wanted to showcase like all the lasers and everything that were coming out of I already forgot what they were called, the alien aircraft, the alien war machines. Yeah. So they decide that they're going to leave this area. This is all like within the first night. This is the first night already. All of this is happening. This is just one day. In the book, it takes 3 weeks for the Martians to get annihilated. In the movie version, it's 3 days. So this is all in the first night already. They dropped a nuclear bomb. They did all this stuff. They figured out that they can't do anything about it. They said it was going to take 3 days. That's what the scientists deduced, that it was going to take 3 days for the Martians to take completely over the Earth. So they're on time constraints. I was going to get to the part where they left. The reason I brought up, again, the fact that the doctor could fly and he had his own plane. He ended up taking a military plane, him and what was her name again? I forget.
Sylvia.
The doctor and Sylvia are flying. And this is, I didn't realize it was a plane at first. This is why I bring it up. I thought they were in a car, and she's like, can't you go any higher? We're gonna crash or something like that. And I remember when I heard her say that, I'm like, what do you mean go higher? That sounds weird. Why would she say that? And I realized it's because they're flying. He's flying a plane. He took a military plane to fly him and Sylvia off away from where they were. And
fuck everybody else.
He was flying. He flew. He just got in a plane and he took Sylvia and he started flying away from the scene. I just thought that was so funny. And I don't know why. It's just so weird. All these doctors running around with this flying knowledge, and they end up crashing and they end up holing up in a little farmhouse. And what do they do as soon as they get to the farmhouse? They decide to have breakfast.
They're going to have some food. Why not? She's going to make some eggs and one slice of bacon. That part was the unbelievable part too. One slice of bacon for three eggs? Who eats like that? He sent me the orange juice. And one of those crafts comes crashing down and it has an incredible model of the farmhouse that they're hiding in, that gets run over, you know, well, not run over, but you know, the thing crashes right into it. And I like this because it shows that there's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to hide. They thought they were going to be safe for a minute and they weren't. The things that are coming for them, and they're hiding, and that little mechanical arm comes out and the Dr. Forrester is able to whack it off. He whacks it off and I can't stop saying it. And it has that eye on it that resembles the alien eye. And I thought, well, I didn't get that, because I was like, why does it look like that? But then he said later that it makes sense. Everything that they're saying made sense to me as a non-scientist with no science knowledge. That the war machine made it resemble itself. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, they use it like a second eye. And the alien is there and they managed to get away, but they got that little robot eye. They get some of the blood sample of the alien and they managed to escape and take it to the other scientists. And they're still trying to figure out a way to take these fucking aliens out, and they still have nothing. They have nothing. And I'm looking at the time that's left in the movie and I'm like, but how is this going to go? Because you guys aren't accomplishing anything. Now people are starting to freak out. And I love that they're showing the looting. They're showing the people fighting to get in cars and evacuate the city. And all of that's happening is incredible, because it took a lot of cooperation to do that. But it looks really good, I thought, for back then. They're clearing the streets. It's complete chaos. People are scared. People are running. That's what it would have been like.
They show one of the scenes when they were showing in the city, where all the cars and all the people are like running around trying, they're evacuating, all that stuff, was on a highway that had just been built, and they got permission from the city to film there. So that's another way, I guess, of saving money. They didn't have to
shut down
traffic and all that.
Because they had empty streets, they had empty stuff, they had empty roads.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They did shoot another scene in a church there in Los Angeles. So again, very interesting that they were able to do all this stuff on such a small budget. But anyways, okay, so One of the things was that other scientist, the woman scientist, I hate saying woman scientist like that because like, oh, it's a woman scientist. But yeah, she didn't have a name. But she was the one that figured out that the she was looking at the blood sample that the Martians were anemic. So that's when they figure out, like really, really hone down that, okay, so these aliens, the way we're going to have to defeat them is biologically. Biologically, the alien versus the technology. Yeah. How, they don't know. In the book version, they're actually eating the people. Well, not, yeah. Kind of, they're eating the people, essentially. They're taking of the, I don't know how else to describe it. They're slurping up the people. It's the only way I can describe it.
Like the killer clowns from outer space. Yes. They stick in a little.
It's the only way. I didn't know how else to describe it. But that's how they're eating the people. They're eating the people for whatever. And it's different. That's how they end up meeting their demise. Why am I talking like that? Meeting their demise? That's like, that sounds weird.
Well, that's
like,
what's happening. They're meeting their demise.
Okay. All right. It sounds kind of old school. Okay. Anyways. And so it's going to have to be done differently here. But yeah, the way Alma was describing, so they realize, okay, so we're on day two now. We only have one more day before these Martians completely take over. They now need to officially evacuate everybody, evacuate the cities, and send them off somewhere else. Although where were they really going to send them? I was thinking, because these Martians are landing everywhere. I mean, in California alone, they, you know, even though it's based around Los Angeles, they didn't land in Los Angeles. They landed outside of Los Angeles. They landed in the outskirts, in the rural areas. Ooh, I said rural, fine.
Okay. Rural.
Okay, great. Now I'm gonna be thinking of the way I said rural now. Oh great, I already forgot what I was saying. Oh yeah, so
oh, where they landed, yeah.
Yeah, so they were landing on in the rural areas, and so where were they sent? I mean, I know where they eventually sent them. I know where they sent them. I'm just curious why they chose the place that they were going to send them if it seemed like these Martians were landing everywhere, not just in the cities. As a matter of fact, it didn't even really look like they were landing in the cities, at least in the U.S. They were landing in the outskirts. Oh, speaking of which, why was it that Washington, D.C. was completely unscathed? Did you notice that? They said that. It wasn't touched. They made a point of saying that.
Didn't think there were no smart people there that they needed to take out. You know, that's always been a thing. Nobody there worth it, you know. Let those guys carry on. We'll get to them eventually. I don't know. Maybe they wanted the White House to go chill in. That was going to be their pad, you know.
Okay. With their little they liked it. They liked and shit. They like the real estate. So they were like, don't touch it because we like the real estate. This is where we're going to roll out of. Just don't do it. No, because I remember when they said that, they were talking about, because it's happening all over the world. I mean, we're watching it from the California side, but it's happening all over the world. They're talking about cities that were taken out. I think Paris was taken out, maybe London, a whole bunch of other cities. In India, in other places in Asia. But they made a point of saying that Washington, D.C., like, was like they could still communicate out of there. I don't know. Maybe they just needed somewhere for us to be
able
to.
Perhaps the population wasn't, like as great as it is now. You know, back in a bit of the population. I don't know. There was a lot of people where they were at. They were having the hoedown at the square dance or whatever.
The square dance. I mean, they were all into that square dance, too, man. There was a lot of people there. They were all dressed up and everything.
I thought that was going to be a thing that we're going to do when we're grown-ups. Don't you remember learning to square dance when we were kids? I thought that was going to be an adult thing that we had to do. And I got really into it because I thought it was fun. It was like grab your partner and all that shit and circling around. I thought that's what grown-ups did. No, that was weird things you do in Texas, I think. It was weird.
It was PE. I remember that. And I remember learning them. And then, as a matter of fact, when I was watching this movie, I was like, how did we remember what moves to do? Did we actually know what they were saying? Like,
they announced them.
Do-si-do. I know. What I mean is, though, did we actually understand the do-si-do and the.
Yeah, we did. they told you what it was, so that way whenever they call it out, because you didn't know what they were going to call out, but you knew the move. So you knew what a do-si-do was. You hook your arm, you swing around. So they would teach you like the basics. And then the caller would make up whatever it was that you were going to do. So that was a thing. We did that. We learned the raspa too.
Oh my God. I forgot how they went. Oh my God. You're right. I don't even remember how that went. Did we? I can't even imagine. I'm not even going to sit here and try to,
I know,
try to remember that. You do?
Yeah.
Show me. No, I'm just kidding.
But nobody else can see it. They won't be able to like say, wow, that's a really great dance you learned there. Now we were talking about War of the Worlds though.
Oh yeah. Okay. So, oh my God, I already got distracted. Where the hell were we? Okay.
It's somewhere like, okay, we have like a day left. And yes. Things got looted. They were supposed to be taking supplies somewhere. And in that, all the
people, fuck? This pissed me off.
Yeah, that's when people started going like, that's it. It's the end of the world. They started fucking each other over because they were pulling people out of their vehicles. That scene was well coordinated. It looked like they were really getting trampled. People were getting, they didn't use like stunt doubles. You know, there was a point where there's like, there was also a soldier that was on fire. I swear he had no protective gear on his face. It looked like his
It didn't look like it at all.
Fire. And I'm like, shit, stunt people back then, they were like, oh my gosh, like I never could do that. The actor himself was getting thrown on the ground. There was people like a huge mosh pit, and they take over the military vehicles and everything and the supplies. They get separated, and that's when he goes to try to look for Sylvia, because he knew she'd probably be in a church, because she had lost her her pastor uncle, who was the person she lived with, and he died early on in the film because he wanted to make friends with the aliens and they obliterated him. And that part looked really amazing, by the way. I know it happened early and I didn't even touch on it, but it was really cool looking because the ground around the alien war machine was just completely like burned, charred, like no life on it. And he looked like he was marching to his death, but at the same time, it was like, I know that we can reach them. And they show him as the lone person who is going to go up against the aliens. And they just disintegrate him into ash. And it was like, yeah, they don't give a shit. They're here. They're here to kill everyone. And so she finds the church to be a safe haven. So he's going from one church to the next, trying to find Sylvia. But people are fucked up. People are dead, and all that. And they do find each other. They were separated for a little bit. He finds her. They originally intended for them to be like a romantic couple, but they were not in the film. I think that was just his like a friend, because he felt the connection to her, and also because of her loss of her uncle. When he first got there, they were like, oh, you can stay with me. Cause that's what you did back then. You stayed with strangers. You just say, hey, come on over. I don't
stranger
know what you do
into town. Yeah. And you could stay with me, stranger. I don't know who you are, but go ahead.
You could be clipping your toenails up in my living room, or, you know, not wash your hands after you pee. You don't know this person, but that's how they did it back then. So they reconnect. Shit is fucked. It looks like they're all going to die.
Well, really pissed me off though, because there's a point where, like you were talking about earlier, they decide to leave the university where they're doing all their experimenting on the blood and trying to figure everything out, and they all take off because they have to evacuate the city. They're going to wherever this fucking safe place is. And they start loading up all their scientific equipment. They make a point of saying all their equipment, all their scientific equipment, into a bus and into like a military vehicle. And as they drive through, they have to drive through town. And that's when the mob takes over the two vehicles, and that's where everybody gets separated and all that. And that's the scene, the chaotic scene that Alamo was describing earlier. But there's a part where the doctor mentions it, and it's so true. He's like, they're slitting their own throats, he says, because they need all that equipment, that scientific equipment, to figure out what the weakness is of these Martians, of these aliens. But the people are so chaotic and so the mob mentality has taken over that they don't care. They're not listening to any kind of reason or anything. So everything gets taken or destroyed, or it doesn't even matter anymore because it's out of the hands of the people who could actually do anything about it. But yeah, so those scenes in movies always annoy me because without getting too real, I always think that's how people really are. At the root of things, that's how people really are. They don't give a shit about other people. And for me, that's where the worst horror movies are the ones where it's the people are the villains, because it seems most real to me.
Yeah, and I think that's why in the beginning they showed that level of cooperation and people listening, because they were going to show that later on everybody's like, every man for himself, fuck everybody. But even if you all know you're going to die, that's the thing, is that by that last day and the last part of the film is that everyone's aware that the aliens are here to kill us all. So, you know, it's just kind of desperation. You'd think that some people, they huddled up in those churches to be together in their last hours or whatever. But most people are going to just be like, oh, well, you know, fuck you. And then so they're singing their hymns, they're doing their thing, and they start to show the alien war machines just crashing down, you know, like they're just slowly moving, and then then they fall asleep on the ground.
I read that the war machines losing power, the sound effects was used by a vacuum being turned off. Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really interesting the way they like I said before, all the sound effects and the visual effects and everything was genius the way they figured all this stuff out. But into the church, one of the war machines crashes, and they're like, oh shit, what happened? They go out and they start seeing it happen all around them. So at the end of the day, the scientists didn't have to do anything. You know, but they didn't know that, you know, all these fucking asshole mob people didn't know that. And they out.
I did an impression of the alien diet. And it's like reaches out its disgusting tentacle arm with its little suction cup fingertip. I would have kicked that motherfucker while it was down there. Fuck you for killing people, you know, and stomping on it. Just a little bit of like, you know, do a little wrestling move on him, slam down on it. They died because of our cooties. At the end of the day.
Yep, exactly.
We're disgusting. We're so fucking gross that aliens landing on our planet would die just from breathing our disgusting air. Can you imagine how quickly they'd die today with this heat and the pollution and stuff? They'd probably be dead within 24 hours because of our cooties, you know?
Cooties and global warming and pollution and all that. Yep. But yeah, that is actually what the narrator pops on and to say something. Let me see if I can find it. Narrator says there's no resistance to the bacteria in our atmosphere, to which we have long since become immune. After all that men could do had failed, they were destroyed and humanity was saved by the little things. So yeah, there and I stopped reading there because I did want to mention real quick that in the movie version there was it's not a Christianity slant, it's not that, it's just they happen to make mention of God more in this than not more they make mention of God in this, whereas in the book there is no religious
undertone
substory or subplot. Anything like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, subplot or anything like that. There, mm-hmm. There isn't. But in this one, there is, because we have the pastor in the beginning that is why do I always forget her name? I'm sorry. What is her name?
Sylvia.
Again? Sylvia. Mm-hmm. Sylvia's uncle. Why is it always an uncle? It's always an uncle, isn't it? Huh.
Yeah, like the bachelor uncle, you know.
But her uncle is a pastor. He's the one that thinks that he, you know, that these aliens are closer to God because they are, you know, aliens. And that's why he thinks that he can talk to Yeah, that's why he goes up to them and he thinks he can talk to them and like make peace with them. But that doesn't happen. She ends up going to a church because that's where she feels at most peace. That's why we have all those people in the church, because that's where they found, like, they, you know, if they were going to all die, they wanted to go out, you know, there. He goes to the church because he remembers, you know, that because of her faith. And but in the actual book, there's none of that. Because mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, Wells was agnostic, if not atheist. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I just wanted to mention that because that is what it, but it wasn't, and I'm not poo-pooing on anybody's faith at all. I'm just saying it wasn't overly Christian, the storyline either. Anyways, I just mentioned mm-hmm. that because it was a part of the story though. That it was her faith. It was the pastor's faith that made him think that, you know, all that. But yeah, anyway, so that's the end. And it ended just like that. They were all standing outside the church and they look around and they start seeing them fall out of the sky. And that's where the narrator comes on and says that. And that's it. And we're out.
That's it. Peace out. The end. Do, do, do. And that's the closing song. That's what it's on.
Yeah,
it's
that was the closing song. Yeah. But I liked it. This movie mm-hmm. was 85 minutes, which is a little bit longer than the other movies we've been watching. So it's like more akin to something we watched today. And I don't know. I was just enthralled the whole time just watching the screen, like, ooh, you know, even though I knew what was going to happen, I knew everything was going to happen. I still was glued to the screen watching and everything, trying to remember how everything went. And the actress who played Sylvia, she's a great screamer because she had a couple of great screams in the story. Mm-hmm. Of course, each time she screamed, she was manhandled, though. It was just like, okay, you know, calm, mm-hmm. you know, you can take your hands off her and stop trying to smother her with your wrist there.
The shaking of the women shaking. In the movies, right? Yeah. They always had to be doing that shaking. The actors, Jane Barry and Anne Robinson, a little piece of trivia, they appeared in the 2005 remake, 2005 yes. Alma. I've been saying the wrong years for everything. And they played the grandparents of that punk ass kid.
Why do we always remember that fucking kid like that?
Kid, I'm gonna punch that guy. Yeah, at the end, so they have their the grandparents of it. I thought that was pretty cool that they're like, hey, come out and you can be in this for a little cameo of sorts. And so that was pretty neat.
She also was in the actress in a couple other cameos that were related to this as well. I can't remember exactly
the TV ones, show series and something else. There was another production of it.
Mm-hmm. But I just found that that's interesting, because like you said, even though it was like they were on screen for like not even 5 seconds, I don't think, but it was just like a quick little nod to like, hey, look, the OGs are here. Mm-hmm. So obviously, if it isn't obvious, I love this movie. It's I need to reread. I need to re-listen to the radio broadcast too. I told myself to do that before we did this, but I just didn't get a chance to. I believe if y'all are interested in listening to that, the radio broadcast, the one that scared the bejesus out of people on the East Coast when it originally aired in 1930 mm-hmm. something, that aired in 1930 something, the radio broadcast of this.
I would have been one of those people running for the hills. That would have scared the shit out of me. Like, they couldn't have done an announcement, let everybody know for weeks in advance, we're going to do this radio thing. We, you know, people didn't have nothing back then. They didn't have televisions or cell phones. A lot of people didn't even have phones, Dahlia.
I like the way you said regular, cell phones.
They didn't have regular phones, you know? And to hear that, I remember looking and reading about it when I was a kid. It was frightening to think of being one of those people who turned on your little radio and heard the end of the world coming, you know?
Yeah. And I wanted to re-listen to it and put myself in the mood, like just like if I was listening to the radio, but I just didn't get a chance to. So I don't even know why I brought it up because I didn't even get a chance to do it. But if you get a chance to do it, do it. I'm going to have to reread and I'm going to listen to the broadcast. That way I can re-get in the mood. I like these old movies we're watching. I really appreciate mm-hmm. that we picked this this topic for this season. It's because then we can start seeing like when things were remade, you know, we're seeing remakes of some of these movies or reimaginings or whatever.
The things you see in other films. Yes. Uh-huh. You could see a lot of it. And without it, it wouldn't have evolved into what we have in cinema now. And I love the stories and how they would make them into a film, because you had a story and how you create it. This, it shows a lot of the work that goes into it. More physical, because sometimes we just have what we have now and people are like, oh, that looks so fake. Well, there was a time that, you know, you're working.
You got to start somewhere. You got to start somewhere. Come on.
It's to make that thing that's in your imagination real on the screen. It's a lot of work and I love it. I'm really enjoying looking at that. It's the films are exciting. They're fun to watch. I put myself in the mood. I get real into it and just like let the movie kind of just take it all in. And I think I'm appreciated them more now too as an adult than when I was a kid and kind of was like, what is this? You know, especially I think Tarantula has been one of my fun favorite ones. I really like that. I love this. The films they just keep, they're just really great. Watch them.
And this is another one of those movies that we've discussed this season where it's based on a story, this one a novel, but I mean where it's based off a story from someone else. Tarantula was not. I can't remember what other ones were not, but this is one of those that was based on. So that's why it's interesting, because they get the inspiration from this story, from this book, and then they try to. And that's why we discussed the differences, how they could bring to life what was on the pages and where they said, oh, we can't do that. That's why they made them flying or whatever. But anyways, this was The War of the Worlds, 1953. And that was fun discussing. If y'all haven't watched it, we watched it on Paramount Plus. I'm sure it's available in lots of other places. But if you already have Paramount Plus, you know, watch it there. I always say that a lot of these movies are available on YouTube because people put up movies on YouTube. I didn't personally look to see if it was there, but just check it out. All right, Alma. So if anybody wants to get a hold of us and tell us what they thought of this movie, where should they get a hold of us on the interwebs?
You can check us out on our website, nightmaremoviepodcast.com. Our Instagram is at nightmaremoviepodcast. Our Twitter at nightmareonfit. That's nightmareon5th. And then we have horrormovieblog.com. And Twitter is at horrormovieblog. Dahlia has our Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee information.
And our Patreon is patreon.com/nightmaremoviepodcast. And our Buy Me a Coffee for that one-time donation is buymeacoffee.com/nightmarepod. All of these links are in our show notes. And all right, everybody, that was The War of the Worlds. Thank you for listening this week. Until next week, bye.
Bye-bye.